Welcome back to another episode of the Right Read Podcast. I'm your co-host, Miles Reed.
And I'm your co-host, Davon Reed.
And today we got a special guest for you, the Greg Grant.
What am I supposed to say?
Whatever's on your heart, that's what you're supposed
Thanks
to say.
For having me, guys. I appreciate you guys inviting me on. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate you showing up. We're still very young in our podcasting, but we felt like it was very important to honor somebody in our small neighborhood who's a legend, and especially with the era of, you know, digital media, surprising that you don't see as much as the homage that you deserve being floating around on the internet. But the real ones know, and the real ones respect what you're doing for the community currently and what you've done and set the path for players like me, myself, players like Malachi, players like Cook, players like Miles Powell, just to name some of the few that have actually touched the league and following your footsteps. So as one of those players, I personally want to say thank you, and I appreciate you. And this is just here paying homage to you as people that grew up under you, honestly.
Oh, man, I appreciate that. You know, being considered the old school guy, you don't, like yourself, Malachi and Miles and Charles Cook, guys who I seen come up playing ball in high school and also reaching the goal that you guys reach. We don't talk as much. You know, I cheer from afar, root for afar, but it's good to hear a guy like yourself who played in the league and done the things you've done on the basketball court give me some recognition about, you know, the path I took as well. Appreciate that.
For sure. So, you know, what we always like to start off on the Right Read Podcast, just want to talk about what we got on today. So as our guest, you just tell us what you fit, what you got on today.
Oh, I'm basic, man. I just saw this in the closet and said, let me just throw this sweatsuit on. Mm-hmm. I just got on the Adidas sweatsuit with Adidas. I'm finally matching. Normally, I ain't matching. I'm going to have on the Nike or something else.
Every time I see you, you're always in some type of running.
I keep running gear on. So. Yeah. I can have on dress pants, but I'm going to have on some running shoes in case I got to run somewhere.
Okay.
But, yeah, just Adidas today.
Okay. You're clean.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Sure. I'll go next. Start from the top. Exclusive London Supreme crew neck that I got, what we got from in London. Pants, pleasure, snow pants, light material, snow pants. And then for the feet, some classic cherry 12s. What about you,
Leon? I start from the top. This is something I picked up as well in London. This is one of my favorite pieces. It looks like a Rangers jersey, but it's actually St. Michael. It's a new streetwear brand, high fashion. So this is a great piece. And then I got on pants from Jersey. What is it? Santana Labs. Shout out to Santana Labs. Shout out to Jersey and all the creators and people in the fashion space. And then I just went old school and I took it back with some all white Chucks. So kept it simple today, fellas.
Okay.
This episode of the Right Read Podcast is brought to you by Floyd's Financial Group, providing protection, security, and a peace of mind. This group includes life insurance, estate planning, trust and will, tax-free retirement, mortgage protection, final expenses, and Medicare. For more information, contact Sabrina Floyd at 843-765-6088. For a free financial review and assessment, please mention the Right Read Podcast.
Okay, so we just want to get into your story a little bit and talk about your path and your journey. But I just want to first drop some knowledge on some people who may not be familiar, although they should already be familiar. You are one of just under 4,300 players to ever be on an NBA court in an NBA jersey. You are of the smaller percentage that have actually been drafted to the NBA, heard their name called. You were draft number 52 and 89 to the Phoenix Suns. Just kind of talk about, I guess, night one draft night and just a little bit about your whole career, however you want to go for it.
Well, 89 was a special year for me and my college teammates. We actually went to the national championship at Division III. We finished a 30-2 record. Should have won the national championship, lost by, I think, 6 or 8 points. So, you know, we had scouts, NBA scouts coming all season to the games. But the chances of a D3 kid getting drafted, it's almost impossible, even if you're playing well. I averaged 33 that year. So, you know, I was doing my thing on the court. But, you know, I still knew it was a long shot that, you know, I probably had to go into camp as a free agent. And then after the season, after we lost, you know, we started going to the combines, Portsmouth, Orlando, Chicago. That year, 89, Charles Smith was the Big East Player of the Year. I went up, and Tim Hardaway was also at one of the camps. He was at Portsmouth in Chicago. So, you know, I was nervous going up against these guys. Obviously, I'm D3, they Division I. But once we started playing, I realized they wasn't better than me. You know, they wasn't faster. They wasn't stronger or quicker. Everything that I thought the next level might be, because of the Division I. Now, once I realized that, so I just balled. And then when draft night come, we at my mom's house out West Trenton. Not thinking, not sure if I'm going to get drafted. I wasn't sitting there like Shador. Thank God.
That's still crazy.
But I was nervous. And then after, like, I thought Portland was going to take me or Indiana. And once they didn't take me, I didn't think I was going to get drafted. And then Phoenix came up with the 52nd pick. Charles Smith wasn't drafted yet. So I'm like, okay, the Big East Player of the Year, I'm not going before that guy. And Phoenix took me. And that's when it started. Once I got drafted, I knew I was going to play in the league. Most people thought, like, oh, they just took him.
Right.
You've been there. You know, he has no shot. They had Jeff Hornacek, Kevin Johnson, Dan Mauley, Eddie Johnson. They drafted two more guards. They brought Michael Williams, who just won the championship with Detroit, over in a trade. So there was, like, zero chances for me to make that team. But right. I just knew that, you know, giving me that opportunity that, you know, I was so close to my dream that no one's stopping this from happening. Right. So.
Awesome.
I was going to say, just like, based off your experience or your journey going to the NBA, what point of, like, the process of getting tryouts to the Portsmouth Combine, all that, at what point exactly you knew it was like, okay, I feel like this is where, like, my greatest chances is going to be to get drafted?
We was in Orlando. After we went to Portsmouth, we went to Japan, played over there in the combine. Then we came back and played in Orlando. And I remember, you guys would know, Pooh Richardson played at UCLA. He's from Philly. Remember playing against him in the Summer League, Sunny Hill League, the summers before my senior year. And He was like, "Lil G, you nice. He was like, "You from where?" I said, "Trenton." He was like, "Wow." He said, so he was projected to be a first round pick. I don't even know if they had the lottery there, but he was going to be a top 10 pick. And he was like, he had a good game the first game. And then he was like, "I'm done. That's all they're going to see of me." You know what I mean? He said, it's on you now.
So he just knew.
He just kind of like, I'm older. I know now that's how guys did back then. They had a great game. The agent tell them, that's it. They ain't going to see no more of you.
That's kind of like how, not to that extent, but it's kind of like how it is now. Like, if you already got that high stature of, like, he already proved himself. Through college
and everything, and like, but back then it was even, you played back then. Now they probably wouldn't even play, and then some, because you didn't sign a contract until after you made the team. Now, no joker sign a contract as soon as they get drafted. So so Poole was like, "I'm done," and that was the game I actually played. I started and played against Charles Smith.
Okay,
and I just I played really well against him. Had one of my better games that summer, and I think that's right there. And after the game, Poole was like, "Yo, you killed that, Joe. You know what I mean? Like, you got a shot, man. Right. Somebody going to take you, bro. And right then, that gave me some confidence."
Okay. So as, I guess, a quote-unquote journeyman in the NBA to one quote-unquote journeyman in the NBA, how did you navigate with playing so many teams in the NBA? And also, what was your favorite spot? And, like, kind of let them know just the insight that we have about how difficult it is to even do that? And then just kind of, I just want you to kind of explain your career about that level.
My favorite, obviously, Phoenix was my favorite spot because that was my first team. They drafted me, my first experience being in the NBA. My favorite team was the Sixers because I grew up a Sixer fan. Mm-hmm. So I never imagined playing for the Sixers. I wanted to play in the NBA, but never thought I would be playing for the Sixers. So Sixers is probably the biggest dream that I ever had that came true, playing with a team that I grew up rooting for and idolizing all those years. The journey, as you know, most people, I don't think I had a 2-year contract my whole 8 years of playing. So I had a 2-year contract with Phoenix, but it was a player option. The first year was my guarantee. Second year was the team option. Mm-hmm. And most people don't know when you don't get the 2 or 3 year deal, you're not safe.
Of course.
So every summer is like, you gotta make a team. And that's the part that most people don't realize the difficulty is like, you got to make a team where there's no way to make a team. Mm-hmm. If they got 12 guaranteed contracts, you're not breaking through. I don't care how well you play. Mm-hmm. And most people don't realize that. That's the challenging part. And I always tell people, and somebody was asking me, I was like, can you imagine there's a million teachers, but can you imagine there was only 450 teachers in the world? Mm-hmm. And every year they drafted more teachers. How could you survive that? How can you survive and have one of those jobs? And they like almost impossible because every year there's a draft. Somebody's coming in every year. A first round draft pick is going to be on the team.
60 new
every single year. So imagine if there's only 450 of you in the world and someone's coming in every year to take your job.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because
go ahead.
It's funny you say that because I was just talking to my grandma about this yesterday because she was watching the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. And you know, NFL, this is like, what, 7 rounds each?
Yeah.
And like each team hold, what, about 30 to 40 people?
Probably more than that. It's like 53. That. I think they cut down to 53.
But
like,
traveling team.
So in a sense, they tripling the amount of people in the NBA.
Right.
And it's like, because I had this debate with my friends all the time, like, what sport is harder, NBA or NFL? And I'd be telling, like, NBA is just way smaller chance for you to get into the league rather than
And most people look at like LeBron, they look at Steph, they look at the players that plays 10 plus years. Mm-hmm, right. But they'll tell you the average survival rate is what, 3 years
three
in the NBA.
Years.
Yeah, that's
3 to 5 years.
That's almost impossible. So the journey for me was like my 7-8 years of playing in the NBA, most people would never really understand it. When you don't have a guaranteed contract and you got to make a team, mm-hmm. most people don't realize how hard it is to make a team.
At
you
all.
Know.
Right. They
you,
do not.
They have no clue.
Forget like them thinking how easy it is to actually play because a lot of people are creatives. I ain't going to call them crazy, but a lot of people creative. I ain't going to tell them what they can or can't do. But they don't know how hard it is to play in the NBA, let alone they don't know how hard it is to make a team, especially when you come in as not a non-guaranteed player or you trying to just on an exhibit 10. Like, those things are like, almost impossible.
It's almost impossible. So anybody that plays 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, most people cannot do that. Mm-hmm. The average, 99% of the average basketball player cannot survive in the NBA. That's why I think you say it was under 4,300, or I think Magic said something to me Magic said this years ago, he said, I think he put it at 45 or 5,000. He said there's only 5,000 people that ever step foot on an NBA court. He said, so no matter where you go at in life, if you go to the movies, you go to a football game or Coliseum, you might be the only player to ever play in the NBA in that arena. That's how few people make it at that level. So the thing about it, no matter you, we all from here, but no matter where you go at, you're going to be the only guy that played in the NBA.
Right.
Chances are 9 times out of 10.
Right.
And that's rare. Like if you at a mall and you say, how many doctors are here? Mm-hmm. Somebody going to say, I'm a doctor. Right. Or I'm in the medical field. How many teachers or educators? Oh, yeah, no, I'm a teacher.
It's common.
How many NBA players? Ain't going to be there. So that's the rarity of it, mm-hmm. of you not making it to that league.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I wanted to ask you, like you were saying, like how hard it is to be a make it to the NBA and play in the NBA, but you also have coaching experience as well. Like, a lot of people can't be coaches. Like, they can be players but not be coaches because of, like, the IQ and all the stuff that goes in. I'm going to ask you, like, what is harder, being a coach or being a player, like, all around?
Being a player. I mean, like we just said, you know, to survive at that level, being a player at that level, it's tough because, like you say, it's not only most of it has nothing to do with your skill set. Mm-hmm. Because once you're a pro, you're a pro. You know how to dribble. You know how to shoot. You know how to pass. You know how to defend. You know how to think. So it ain't really got nothing to do with your skill set. It's the business of someone's always coming in to take your job, and then it's also the business of that coach know you're better than that person, but we got to keep this person. Mm-hmm. And they don't got to give you a reason why. You know what I mean? Right. But you know, and they know you better than that person. So, you know, playing is always difficult and tough because, like you say, it's not just you playing in the NBA, but it's also your livelihood. Mm-hmm. You know, you got a house, you got a car, you got a family. So every year, you know, you still got to support them and maintain a job and you know, a way of living. So you have all that bottled up. And then you're young. You're still 24, 25 years old, and you got to deal with all that stuff. So coaching is knowledge. Coaching is knowledge in basketball. That's the easy part. Mm-hmm. Making a team and playing in the NBA is a whole lot more that goes with that.
Okay, so we talked about it earlier, 89 draft. And you talked about, like, your experience going against some of those people in the pre-draft process. After it was all said and done, and during that time, who were some of the players in your draft that you respected the most? Because you had players like Sean Kemp in there, Tim Hardaway Jr., Lottie Divac, just to name some of the big names. Who were some people that you respected their career, and maybe at the time you respected them?
I would say, let me see, when I came out, Tim Hardaway, because we was both at Portsmouth. Portsmouth, I don't know if you went to Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. Portsmouth is the first one, and that one is for guys, you know, second round, guys that might be second round picks, guys like on the bubble, not, you know, I'm sure.
But all seniors.
All seniors. Mm-hmm. And Tim Hardaway was there. I think he came from UTEP. Never heard of him. Obviously, he never heard of me. And Tim was balling. And, you know, and I was balling. That's why we was able to, you know, go to the next camp and then to the next camp. But then to see him in the NBA shine and grow and become an all-star and become one of the top players in the league at that time. So I always respected Tim Hardaway game because I knew where he came from. Mm-hmm. I know he wasn't, you know, high on the draft chart when he first got out of school and everything. So he built himself into a really great career. B.J. Armstrong, obviously, went against him. Mookie Blaylock was in that draft. They were some solid, good guards in that draft that wound up having good careers, and I respect them for that.
Awesome.
Okay. So, you go through your player career, basketball career, coaching career. What's life like after? Are you still involved in some sort of way with basketball? If not, is there anything outside of basketball that you do nowadays?
I'm president of the Trenton High Basketball Association. We run the sports for the school district, Trenton School District. So this is our third year with basketball. We bringing in track, soccer, also in this year. So we're excited about that. I used to coach Trenton High School. Now my childhood friend Pup, Darryl Young, is coaching. He always wants to get free help. Can you train this guy? Can this guy come over? Everything's for free.
Right.
Yeah. And he just tell him, yeah, go. Greg is over at Hedgepath. Go over there. So he always doing stuff he ain't supposed to do.
Right.
So
gonna see this and
he
gonna.
Yeah, yeah. He know it's true too. But I look back at my career. Like I said, I was a college dropout. Came right out of Trenton High, no scholarship. Go out to Marsh Brown in Atlanta, play for a semester, drop out of school, work at a fish store for a year and a half, decide to go back to college, and then 3 years later, I'm in the NBA. So the journey, you know, might seem like it was wonderful, but it was a struggle. But, you know, I'm blessed. You know, I'm in my high school Hall of Fame. I'm in my college Hall of Fame. I'm in the National Small College Hall of Fame. Jersey retired at Trenton High School. Got a park named after me. Been involved in the community from day one since I, you know, since I became an NBA player. And, you know, I got 5 grandkids. All my kids are doing well. You know, my mother's about to turn 75 in about a week. So, you know, I'm just blessed, man. And also to see guys like Devon come up, Malachi, Miles, Charles Cook, guys. Because I know, you know, everybody say times are different. That's obvious. You know, they say the old school guys was better and it was harder to play back then. But the struggle is the struggle.
Yeah.
I don't care what era you're in. When you're among some of the best players that ever played a game,
ever,
it don't matter what era you came through.
Right.
So I respect guys who played in the 50s and 60s, and I respect the guys who play today because I know that it's not easy playing in that league.
I'm glad you said that. I know me, Davon, and my dad, we always have this conversation about if players that's been playing like in the 80s, 90s are able to compete with the people of this generation compared to this generation to the old generation. Now, who do you think will survive, this generation or?
Oh, this generation definitely is not better than the old school generations. I respect that they're where they are, but it's not even close. But I'm not stupid because I understand Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron, those type of guys can play in any era. They're good enough. But I just think the game has changed so much, you just don't see the physicality this generation. You know, they done changed rules for this generation. The flopping rule, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, they're trying to make the game better because of the way guys are playing. Mm-hmm. But I seen Davon, and it flashed right back to old school. He was playing LeBron. When he locked LeBron up, I know a lot of LeBron fans don't want to hear it. But when he locked him up, he was like, come on.
Right.
That was old school.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that Joker could play back in the day.
Because
he had an attitude about, like, sure, I want this challenge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, LeBron is considered one of the greatest to ever play. But to him, it didn't matter. That's when they say that's old school basketball. We don't have enough of that in this generation where we see guys competing like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, we friends. We play AAU together. We're going to hang out this summer. That didn't happen when I was coming up. So there's definitely a difference in attitude and competing-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But talent-wise, Jokers are just as talented today as they were back then. Jokers were just as athletic back then as they are today. Most people say, oh, this generation has more athletes. And no, Dr. J and guys was athletic,
right,
way athletic. So it's just a mixture of both. But competing is definitely different. Guys don't compete like, you know, I think they should compete. But the talent is still there.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Right Read Podcast, like, share, subscribe to our YouTube at The Right Read. Follow us on Instagram, X, and TikTok at The Right Read.
So again, we just want to thank you so much for taking your time out and coming to be on our podcast. I don't even know if you really know what we do, but Miles and I came up with the idea to have the Right Read Podcast. We've been thinking about it for a few years, but it just felt like the time was right now where we just talk about music, fashion, pop culture, sports, and you're actually going to be the first interview of ours. So we appreciate you coming on because we're trying to enter that space as well. But we really just wanted to pay homage to a real legend of Trenton, a real legend of Mercer County, just somebody who inspired and is still inspiring a lot of people because the basketball is one side, but people not knowing always what people are doing behind the scenes to make the community better and pay it forward. So we appreciate all that.
No, thanks, man. I think your pop reached out and said, hey, man, my boys would like you to come on. I'm like, give them my number. Miles hit me up. I said, yeah. You know what I mean? I've been asked to go on podcasts for a while. Mm-hmm. It'd be jokers. I don't know. They inbox me. I'm not going on that podcast. I don't even know who you are. You know what I mean? Right. But, you know, you guys are family.
I appreciate
it. You know what
that.
I'm saying? Like, your dad and I grew up together. And, you know, so it's going to always be yes. Anything
appreciate
you guys
it.
Need. And no hesitation. So I really appreciate you guys having me. I'm glad to be on. I'm glad to see you guys trying to do something positive and do something that you guys are excited about doing. So
appreciate that.
Congrats.
Last thing I'll say, I know they'll be mad if we don't say something about Grand Express. So
Well, like what? Like your dad? What?
What was it about?
Whatever.
What was it about? Because that's all, like,
nah.
Every now and then my dad always say, be like, Grand Express, this Grand Express. We,
when I came back from the league in the summer, I wanted, the park was the park. It was right. Everybody out there, thousands of people coming out, pupping, and them say, hey, put the team together. Again, wanted the money. They, you know, wanted to put the money up. But we worked our butts off, man. You actually had to try out for Grand Express. Okay. We cut jokers. It was a spectacle, but, you know, I know your dad never played high school. I don't think he ever played high school or anything like that. But when it comes to where you probably got some of your toughness from, when it comes to a tough guy that compete and don't think nobody's better than him, he might as well have been in the NBA.
Listen, I'm glad somebody is here to witness.
Hubbard is the greatest thing to ever step on the court. Best believe that.
Listen,
he can lock anybody down. But you know what? When you go out there and play, he was tough. And, you know, coaching him, Pup, and facing them all, it was fun, but it was a headache. Mm. You got a lot of egos, man. You know,
they still got egos.
Yeah, they still argue and compete. If they could, we scared to have a reunion because we think somebody going to go out there and start playing.
At 50 to 60 years old.
Yeah, there's no time they can lock you up.
Come
on,
that's crazy.
But, those were the best days, man. We you know, we played ball. We practiced every day. We hung out afterwards, man. You're talking about, you know, a neighborhood that came together for that Grand Express Summer League time. That's why you hear them always talking about it, because it was like one of the best times of our lives. So for me to be home in the summer, you know, off of for NBA season, just to be around those guys every day, it was great.
For sure. Well, we appreciate you, and we're going to wrap it up right here on another episode of the Right Reed Podcast. I'm your co-host, Davon Reed.
And I'm your other co-host, Miles Reed.
And thank you again to Greg Grant for being a very special guest on today's episode. We'll see y'all next time.
Peace.